CBSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
Hello, Sebastian.
Hi.
We are in the same room.
In the same room,
yes. In the same room. Very exciting, very exciting. Okay, what a great week it has been for Pride. Did you hear about the impromptu visit in Vancouver?
I did, yes. I don't know much about the details. As I understand it, Prime Minister Trudeau just sort of popped in there but didn't march.
Yep.
But then again, in order to march, you need to pre-register, and there's a whole bunch of, like, if they knew that he'd be marching, the crowds would be different, they'd have to change some stuff, they'd have to get some security involved. Like, I wouldn't blame any Prime Minister for choosing to not march in a parade, because, like, when Trudeau marched in the Ottawa parade, it was basically the Trudeau parade that year. There was just so many adjustments that had to be made that it was sort of a different beast.
Exactly.
And, you know, hats off to him for being the first Prime Minister to march. But if nobody ever did it again, just because of the hassle that can be involved, I wouldn't blame
him. I mean, I think it compares well to, I think it was Premier Higgins in New Brunswick. I think that's the province I'm thinking of here. Where he refused to participate on security grounds.
Right.
You know, claiming that, now if I recall correctly, the RCMP said, you know, they provided advice, but the decision not to march was the Premier's decision,
which is
fair enough. I don't know. So, as you said earlier, this past weekend in Vancouver, tens of thousands participated in the annual Pride event. As far as we are aware, this one, I don't think, was disrupted by pro-Palestinian protesters, which is noteworthy in that it hasn't been. But somebody that did cause the smallest of disruptions was Prime Minister Trudeau, who I actually quite like the shirt. It was a black shirt with a rainbow feather detail on it.
Okay.
And just walked around meeting and greeting, shaking the hands of the people who were in attendance. And then left. I think it was about, 20, 30 minutes. Shake some hands, kiss some babies. Typical bog standard politician stuff.
Yep.
And then he left. The march happened. Day before, over 1,000 people participated in the Trans March, one of the largest trans marches in Western Canada, for sure. But overall, pretty much great things. We also saw this past week Sudbury celebrating their Pride. I think from what we've seen as well, things went pretty well with them. Did you have any other Canadian news that you've picked up on over the last little while?
I mean, the news is pretty dominated by a short list of stories. So the big ones are really coming to mind. But other than that, I mean, I did read a bunch of, this small town had a good pride kind of stories. But
exactly. We are always happy to hear that. There was actually a really interesting story out of the CBC London, Ontario. I think it's always worth kind of promoting these smaller stories because they are genuinely good stories. So the United Church in London, Ontario, they have invited a 23-year-old Nigerian refugee. There, he's currently living with the pastor of the United Church.
Okay.
And the church has come together. They've raised funds. They're trying to get him settled. And he said he says, it feels like I'm living for the first time, as if my life has just started, he told the CBC News. Now, the CBC has not revealed his name because, of course, there is concern about the health of his family back in Nigeria.
Yes.
Nigeria, as I believe, recently rolled out even more heinous anti-gay laws. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's one of those nice success stories that in London, Ontario, at this United Church, that congregation, that community has rallied behind and is supporting the man. So it's nice to make sure that we are boosting these good stories as well. Now, I've also been following a story in Alberta. And this relates to the group called YYC United, which is a congregation of a significant number of queer-serving organizations across Alberta, and particularly in Calgary. Now, we talked about, and I think this is important to just flash back a little bit.
Yes.
Do you recall
that
in Saskatchewan...
Saskatchewan.
...the initial legislation that rolled out, quote, parental rights...
Right.
...for addressing trans folks in school boards was being challenged through the courts for, amongst other things, a lack of consultation by the government.
Okay.
There is a legal obligation that the government must, you know, do some consultation with some people.
Right.
And it was revealed that the Premier talked to a couple of his constituents, end of list. No medical professionals in particular were consulted.
I mean, at least the lawyers. If you're going to be changing the law, at least the constitutional lawyers, if nobody else.
Anyway, it got all the way up to the high bench in Saskatchewan.
Yes.
And the judge essentially landed on the side of this law was not properly formulated. It was not properly consulted.
Okay.
That was the issue. Now, our listeners may recall that Saskatchewan introduced effectively a new law replacing the one that had been challenged, and that law contained the notwithstanding clause, essentially neutering the ability of the courts to intervene on the law itself.
Mm-hmm.
I bring this up because we've also seen references to Alberta looking at rolling out parental rights and legislation affecting trans youth in Alberta.
Yes.
Now, the YYC Coalition are likewise frustrated with the lack of consultation of trans folks.
Right.
And they've accused the government of Alberta of holding, quote, secret meetings with stakeholders, of whom none of them were a stakeholder.
Right.
And that seems to be what's drawing the most ire. Now, the Alberta Minister for Arts and Culture and Status of Women has said that the meetings were not secretive.
Alberta, not Saskatchewan?
Yeah, we're talking about Alberta. I was using Saskatchewan as a frame of reference about the lack of consultation. The lack of consultation was challenged in court and Saskatchewan would have lost.
Okay.
And that's the same issue at play here in Alberta.
Right.
And just this past weekend, there was a protest outside the minister's office over secret meetings.
I mean, I can understand having multiple meetings because some of these camps don't even want to be in the same room as each other and really just want to shout each other down and not actually allow the other side to speak. So I could see having like multiple sessions for multiple clusters of groups of people so that they don't talk over each other.
Yeah.
That's not really a closed door meeting. That's not really a secret meeting. That's just a separate meeting. And it doesn't sound like they're even bothering to do that much. Because I could understand some of the parental rights groups. Some of them are transphobic or homophobic, and some of them are just very concerned about the legal position of parents because they want to support their kids and they're just feeling cut out from support. And others, I mean, it's a mixed bag. But still, putting everybody in the same room together, we've seen recordings of town halls and various other events where that happens, where everyone's in the room together and nothing gets done because everyone's just yelling over each other. So I could understand separate meetings, but this comes up so often. There's a right way and a wrong way to do this.
Yeah. Well, the minister says that these, quote, secret meetings were to protect the identity of those participating. because in the past...
Oh, there's been so much doxing and
For those who aren't familiar, the personal contact details of those participating were leaked online, leading to abuse and all kinds of things. So the government of Alberta is claiming that who they've picked and chosen to attend these meetings is being withheld to protect their identity.
Right.
Now, the opponents of this are saying, no, you're just being secretive. Like, this is less about security and more about not wanting to show the cards of who you're consulting.
Mm-hmm.
The YYC group, Queer Citizens United YYC, go on to say, and I quote here from one of the stakeholders from the CBC article on it, the province has decided to hold vital meetings about the future of trans healthcare in the province and is hand-picking who is allowed to be in there, which means most of the people who deal with the trans community, trans healthcare professionals, trans community providers, no pride organizations are being allowed in that meeting, she said. Now, this is one of those frustrating things, and I'm not sure where I fall on this, because it makes me think a little bit about the recent pro-Palestinian protest at Victoria Pride in BC.
Mm-hmm.
And now the thing that's making me think of this Pride Parade protest is because that Pride organization reached out to some organizations in the pro-Palestinian community to get feedback, but some people weren't specifically invited.
Yeah, they weren't called at home personally.
Yeah, they weren't weren't, you know, specifically not invited. Like, it wasn't intentional, you know what I mean?
There's just only so much time in a day.
And only so many people you know, etc., etc. So they weren't invited, and in the end, they protested the Pride March, caused a disruption, so on and so forth. I was shocked to learn that Pride Victoria was actually already consulting with the community.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm being generous with the Conservative government of Alberta, which is a bold step, but if you're being generous to the Conservative government of Danielle Smith in Alberta, then potentially, yes, they are consulting a wide variety of people. Mm. They say they are. They won't tell us who they are,
right,
but they say they're consulting a wide variety of people. But the largest queer coalition in the province of Alberta, representing dozens of queer organizations, is flat out saying, no, they're not.
Mm.
They're cherry picking the voices they hear, and we are not even at the table. Now, being at the table, being in the conversation, is important.
Yeah.
And queer voices are has historically been consistently left out. I can see both sides here, Seb. What are you thinking?
Normally, I'm the one who steelmans, and you're the one who's cynical. I'm going to take the cynical approach this time, and I'm going to say, it's easy for them to invite groups they don't agree with to consultation, pretend to listen, and just ignore them after. Like, they're not even doing base politics here, because there are so many things in politics where people get consulted just as a box-ticking affair and then ignore everything they have to say. And they're not even going through that. And it's not like the premier's a busy woman and she can't make it to every room, because she's not in every room. She's at very few of these meetings personally. So just get a couple people, send them out, do a meeting, and then just take those notes and bin them. It would do the optics, even though you're not actually taking anything in. And they're not even bothering to do that, which is kind of surprising that they're not doing the basic cynical political theater nonsense, which is very interesting to me that they're not even willing to do that. And I don't know how to read into that, but it feels relevant that they're not even bothering to fake it.
You know, I think this is... I see where you're coming from here, because there is... It makes me think of the status of women report, for example.
How many consultations have you heard of where it's obvious that they're just doing a box-ticking affair?
Major consultations that governments have done to make big 100-page reports that lead to nothing.
One of the most infamous examples here in Ottawa is whenever they do... community surveys on public transit or bike lanes.
Oh yeah, and then they completely ignore any details.
It is a box-ticking affair, and then you look at the outcome, and you're like, zero people, including the engineers, wanted this. Like, why did you... It's a thing. So yeah, it's such a bizarre phenomenon when you see this happen.
But I think that we have... What makes me wonder here is that basic refrain of nothing about us without us. You know, these are going ostensibly to be major policy decisions mm-hmm. that directly impact these people.
Yeah, yeah.
So to not even be invited to be at the table is a frustration that I can empathize with. Mm-hmm. But also, it is a government. They cannot meet with everybody.
Yeah.
But maybe their model of having secretive meetings mm-hmm. is not... quote, air quote, you know, the secretive meetings, is not the model that is going to be effective here. Maybe they should be looking at surveys. Maybe they should have a submission process. You know, if organization, like the government is not incapable of consulting the public. If you want to build a park in your neighborhood, there are ways to make yourself heard.
You can also consult with people without revealing who they are, but really... revealing enough information to make people feel like you're not lying. Like, we have met with 4 NGOs, 6 community organizations, you know, 3 groups of this type. Like, you can sort of specify what kinds of groups you've met with without naming them. And I know it's sort of a half measure, and you can always lie about that, but it is something that kind of indicates that they're not saying, just trust me, bro, I'm doing it. It's sort of, you're getting into a little bit too much detail to be completely making it up. And knowing, you know, just saying we have consulted with like 6 community groups, people in the area will know, like, well, I can think of 8 community groups it might be.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I want to digress a little bit here to talk about claims against airlines. Okay. For, you know, missed flights, whatever, what have you.
Okay.
So there is a government body now that deals with complaints. There was a news story that found that about 50% of the complaints
uh-huh.
where passengers have challenged the airlines
okay.
have resulted in payouts by the airlines.
Right.
But the airlines are keeping, and this body, are keeping the details confidential.
Okay.
Including the amount of payouts.
Okay.
And the argument is being made here is that that is not in the public interest. It is definitely in the commercial interest, but not in the public interest. It mm-hmm. is not transparency. It is not accountability.
Mm-hmm.
It is not due democratic process.
Okay.
So it may be challenged on constitutional grounds, the confidentiality of it. This digression serves the purpose of, if you want to buy a radio station, everything you say to that effect is public.
Mm-hmm.
Sensitive financial information is kept private.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are given input on health policy, the public of Alberta deserves to know who is in those back rooms giving that advice
right.
that the Premier is listening to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we are in an open democratic society, ostensibly, here in Canada. So knowing who is informing government
mm-hmm.
is a part of the process of good government.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a fan of these secret meetings at all. If you're bold enough to try and influence government for policy, which is exactly what these meetings are,
mm-hmm.
they're not there for, you know, French fries and Parmesan toast. They are there to influence government policy.
Mm-hmm.
And the public ought to know who they are. And if there is doxing, those who do the doxing should be criminally responsible for that act.
Right.
But the public still ought to know who is influencing policy.
Yeah, fair enough. I got no problem with that argument.
Well, on one of these rare occasions where we agree on something, I'm going to take the opportunity to dip to our first track of the day. We are all Canadian, all queer artists. This is Carol Pope. You thought it was... who did you think it was?
Broken Social Scene.
Broken Social Scene, exactly. This is I Miss My Land by Carol Pope, brand new track. We will be back just after this.
I miss my land, I miss my land, I miss my land. Just walking in it, I'm talking forests and rivers. I miss my land, can't believe that it's come to this. Can't believe that it's come to this. I miss my land. How could you not?
welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And my name is Sebastian.
And are you familiar with the IBA? No. Adjustments?
No. Okay, wait.
Irritable bowel anger.
No, I don't I don't think I am familiar with the IBA.
Exactly. Well, the IBA is the, oh my gosh, even I seem to have misplaced, the International Boxing Association.
Oh, okay, now, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What most people don't realize is the International Boxing Association seems to have significant ties to the Kremlin, specifically to the state of Russia.
Yeah.
And the IBA hasn't actually been recognized as a organization of qualification for this year's International Olympics because the International Olympic Committee last year withdrew their recognition of the International Boxing Association for lack of financial transparency.
Yeah.
There were a whole slew of allegations against the organization, and they have been effectively removed. Now, the reason why I want to talk about this is because it is, I mean, I'm going to do air quotes here, tests from the IBA, this organization that's not responsible for qualification testing for the Olympics, that has been the sort of underpin that's holding up the latest trans athlete scandal in the Olympics.
Against an athlete who isn't even trans.
Two of them.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Specifically two athletes.
Because there's the one boxer that I know of, and she's not even trans. But
neither of them.
Neither of them are.
So Iman Khalif is an Olympic athlete out of, I'm going to say Algeria, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
A country where it is very much illegal to be openly trans.
Yes.
Is not a trans athlete. Now, let me reiterate here. The International Olympic Committee.
Yeah.
Has medical testing.
Yes.
They have assured the public repeatedly.
Yes.
That every single athlete, including, and I'll get to it later, an out trans athlete.
Yes.
Every single athlete has passed the International Olympic Committee's gender testing.
Right.
They all pass. But there are two in particular that have raised suspicions. Now, Iman Khalif from Algeria, it's gotten so bad, the allegations about her being trans, that her own father in Algeria shared with Reuters news agency a copy of her birth certificate, being like, it says female.
Yeah, yeah.
She is female. Born female.
And Algeria is not a country where you can
You can't, to pardon the parlance, you know, mess with that.
Yeah.
I was wanted to use more colourful language. But you can't mess with that. She is a woman.
Yeah.
And let's suspend our conspiratorial mind for a moment and imagine that this is actually a woman in the women's sport who's just trying to compete.
Yes.
And is very good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the challenge is that the International Boxing Association, was it boxing?
Yeah.
Now, they did gender testing.
Yes.
They did a whole bunch of tests.
Well, they do panel testing. It's not, they don't explicitly just do.
They test for chromosomes, testosterone levels, all of those things.
Fundamentally, what they're testing for is doping.
Yeah.
For performance-enhancing drugs over the course of the training period to make them a superior fighter. Because you can, a lot of these things, you can quit them a couple weeks before the Olympics or before the testing. And the effects will fade out over time, but the drugs will leave your system faster than the effects will leave your performance.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of, they take a lot of secondary measures and saying like, well, you know, these levels are high or low, which implies that there was this type of doping, because there's dozens of kinds of doping that you can do. So they can say, like, you know, there's no direct evidence of this kind of doping, but there's indirect evidence because these other levels are too high or too low. What a lot of agencies will do is they will, when they get those preliminary things, they'll move on to the later steps and double check certain things. They'll look at other health measures, you know, blood pressure, whatever. But the IBA was kind of known for just saying like, well, the secondary markers are there. That's good enough for us. And that's one of the many reasons why the Olympic Committee no longer recognizes them, because they weren't as thorough as some of the other agencies.
You say, you reference that the IBA said secondary markers. They said nothing.
This is okay.
And this is the issue. Let me set the scene for you. I'm going to paint you a bit of a picture. Mm-hmm. There is a rising Russian athlete called Azalea Aminova.
Okay.
And she went up against this caliph in a national event that the IBA had. Azalea had an unbroken record until the Algerian boxer put her down.
Right, okay.
Broke the record. Then the IBA, the International Boxing Association, declared disqualification based on testing. Mm-hmm. They never specified what test.
Okay.
They just disqualified her based on the test and never said anything about it. The only time they mentioned chromosomes was over a year later on social media when Khalif was competing in India.
Okay.
They never revealed anything about chromosomes. They just disqualified her, and this Russian rising star gets the win, maintains her unbroken record.
Mm-hmm.
And this poor woman now has a blemish being accused of potentially having mixed chromosomes. The IOC received some of these tests from the International Boxing Association. And they frankly think they're bunk.
Okay.
They're like, these tests show nothing, prove nothing, are not worth it.
Yeah.
The head of the International Olympic Committee has stressed up and down, this is not a trans issue, because she is not trans.
Right, right, right.
There is no evidence at all. And the IBA's allegations of chromosome testing is flimsy at best, and seems more politically motivated than fairness in sports motivated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's sort of really what's underpinning this. It's like everyone's latching onto this issue. Now, it really caught a bit of wildfire when certain right-wing personalities, or no, maybe not right-wing, when certain vocal personalities are coming on board talking about a trans boxer.
Mm-hmm.
J.K. Rowling, Donald Trump, you name a right-wing pundit, they have commented.
I mean, there are even people who are politically neutral who are in the sports commentary space.
Yeah.
Like, I first heard about this story from a boxing commenter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not a an MMA commenter who... Most MMA people overlap with boxing anyway. But anyway, go on, sorry.
Now, there is a trans boxer. And it's neither of the people that has been accused of being a trans boxer.
Right.
The other one was a Taiwanese boxer, Lin Yuting, also is now in the semi-finals and in the welterweight contest.
Okay.
I think it's the welterweight is where they are. And yet again, not a trans person. But the trans person is actually a different boxer entirely. It's a Filipino boxer, Herky Bakiaban. I apologize for mispronouncing any of the name. This Filipino boxer is openly trans and has never taken medication for the purpose of.
Okay.